Growing up, I didn't go to church on Sunday mornings, but on Friday nights, both my mom and I would sit down and watch movies, and she would show them from a Christian perspective.
Growing up, we were out in the woods, so I didn't watch many movies, but I learned to look around me and find a spiritual lesson in everything I saw.
So now, I want you guys to experience the goodness of God in the movies we watch.
Join us as we unpack meaning from the movies we watch.
I'm movie apologist Clark.
And I'm Bethany.
And this is Movie Night Apologetics. Well, what is up, movie lovers? Welcome back to the podcast that loves to show you the goodness of God in the movies we watch. And on today's episode, we're going to be talking about the 2019 movie, The Peanut Butter Falcon. And this was suggested to us by a dear friend of ours, Irina. And is that how it's pronounced, Irina?
Yes, that's how it's pronounced. It's not how it's spelled.
Right.
I see from your notes.
Yeah.
You got two R's and an E in the middle.
Oh, whatever. It's Irina. Yeah.
Irina.
Anyways, thank you, Irina, for suggesting this movie for us. But Bethany, you want to start us off with the description of the movie?
So this is about a man named Zach who has Down syndrome, and he escapes a retirement home where his family has just pushed him, and he is on the run. His caretaker, Eleanor, is trying to find him. But meanwhile, he runs into Tyler, who is also on the run, because he has been doing naughty things, and the guys who he has done it to are not pleased, and they want to beat him in the head with a tire iron. Zach, his dearest dream is to go to the school of the Saltwater Redneck and become a professional wrestler. So that is their goal.
So we got the fun facts for you guys for this 2019 movie, The Peanut Butter Falcon. And some of you guys may not know this, but this movie was inspired by Mark Twain's The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. The movie is a modern take on Twain's story, and a character in the movie even asks if the viewer likes Mark Twain.
Which totally makes sense because it does have Huckleberry Finn vibes when they're floating on the raft down the river.
Oh, okay. Have you ever read the book?
Yeah, it's been a while, but a big portion of the book is Huckleberry Finn. I think he's like 11 years old, and he just decides to float down the river, and he's having all these adventures along the way.
Oh, so he didn't do all the things that Shia LaBeouf's character Tyler did and burn down crabbing pots and steal crab from the water or whatever?
I don't recall that.
Darn. But it was inspired. That's kind of cool. I never read the book. Maybe it's someday I will. Is it worth reading? Would I like it?
Maybe. Twain is a really good writer.
When I was thinking of Mark Twain, I don't know why. I think of like a George Whitefield or a Martin Luther King character. I don't know why I'm thinking of like that. Those kind of figures where they had heavily involved in like social justice and whatnot. But he was just an author.
Think of Mark Twain as a sarcastic old guy who's really good at telling a story.
Yeah, some of the quotes you were looking up today were really funny.
Yeah, he's great.
The main character in this film, Zach, Zach Gottsagen, he met these two directors at, I believe it was a Down syndrome camp, and he told them he wanted to be a movie star. And so the directors were like, this is pretty cool. We can make a movie out of this. And so they based this movie on his, basically on his life. And I thought that was kind of cool.
Wasn't one of the directors named Tyler?
I think so. Yeah. Actually, one of the filmmakers, his name was Tyler Nielsen.
That makes me think that Tyler probably became friends with Zach, like in real life.
Yeah, I think it was. I didn't read the full article on it, but yeah, I think they became friends.
That's cool.
And so lastly, the other one that I thought was pretty cool was this movie was a sleeper hit and became the highest grossing independent film of 2019. And if you think of independent film, that just means they weren't in a big studio. So think of it like you're in your hometown and you have a Walmart and you have mom pop grocery pops. I don't know what a grocery store is called. Harvest Foods. What?
Mom and pop grocery pop?
mom and pop grocery. I see, this is why I wouldn't run a grocery store, because I don't even know how to name them.
No, you don't.
But so it's kind of along those levels. It's not a big corporation studio that made this movie. And that, actually, when they were making this movie, they had to rely on people to help them film for free, basically. So the sites that they shot it near the ocean and everything, all those were free locations that they got to film in.
Oh.
And so that's one of the things that helped them in their budget, which makes me think maybe, just maybe, why this movie ended abruptly. Maybe because they didn't have the funding to end it.
No,
you don't think so?
No, I mean, no, it was just I think thought. That was a deliberate choice.
Yeah, maybe. But anyways, those are a few of the fun facts for you guys. And now we're going to go into kind of our rating system here. And on this show, we have a rating system: water, soda, or slushy. Water being not very good. Soda being, yeah, it's pretty good. Or slushy, it's like, oh, yeah, that's a gem right there. That's a movie. And so I'm going to start out with mine. And I'm just going to say my rating for this movie is slushy. And I almost rated it soda because of the abrupt ending. But then I actually thought about the characters in the story and the relationship between Zach and Tyler. And I loved how Tyler treated Zach like someone who was capable of doing more than what the society thinks that they could handle. And that personally, for me, that's what made it jump up to a slushy, because I thought that was really cool to portray that to that character, because this story was a kind of a depiction of Zach's life and how people treated him. And this probably has helped him in his life, where people are like, oh, he can actually do a lot more than people think. No, we don't have to hold this guy's hand because he has this handicap, because this movie probably portrayed for him that, oh, he's actually capable of doing some stuff. So for those reasons, I actually rated it a slushy. And then I just love the relationship between the two, between how Tyler encouraged Zach that he wasn't bad just because his parents left him. I love the fact that Tyler saved Zach from drowning, taught him how to swim, took him to see Zach's favorite wrestler and to fulfill his dream of becoming a wrestler and becoming the Peanut Butter Falcon. One thing I will say in this movie is that I was noticing plot holes. Like, for example, when Zach was going out of escaping the nursing home, why didn't Carl just hand Zach clothes after he escaped? I mean, he's right there. I mean, he saw Zach slip out.
That's not exactly a hole.
It's not a hole, but it's stupid.
Okay.
And then why did Zach not just escape from the window at night in the first place? I think it would have, I don't know. I mean, I guess it was because of the comical stuff with in the beginning. Oh, he's making this note to this older gal telling her to choke, and then he runs away, and then the security comes and tackles him, and then they put the bars on the door. But I don't know, why not just run away at the beginning? I think that would have been better. And it would have been more realistic in my mind. What do you know?
I think people are complicated, and there's a lot of reasons why he didn't escape that way. It could be that he's afraid of the dark.
True. But he still ran in the dark, despite...
Well, maybe he got desperate enough after they put the bars on his window.
All right, fine. You're just filling up the holes for me, aren't you?
You're welcome.
Another one would be Tyler outran the guys that passed him in the boat, or that he was outrunning in the boat in the water, where he just like goes and dives into these little, I don't know, weeds up there. I feel like the guys would have seen the water. I don't think it would have went away as quickly as it did.
I think that is a good point. There would have been a wake behind the boat.
Yeah, there would have been. It would have been like, oh, yeah, the water is way wavier over here than over there.
Although they were in a motorboat too, so maybe that was disturbing the water enough that they couldn't see it.
Yeah, but they were behind him. And then the other one was just Eleanor just so happens to be strolling by on her nursing home bus, and she finds them sleeping on the beach, and she's like, what the heck? He's like, I'm taking them to see their favorite wrestler and blah, blah, blah. And I don't know. So, some of these things, it's like, if we live in a small town and we know a lot of people, and how many times do we just so happen to run into people that we know? I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Our neighbor handed you your coffee today when we were at the coffee shop.
But how many times does that happen in reality?
Anytime we go out.
Okay, but this is a bigger span. If I went and drove to Timbuktu, I probably wouldn't see her. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the math ratio there, it doesn't make sense.
I feel like people are always running into people they know, even if they're in a foreign country. Mm. I've heard so many of those stories. Like, I was on my way to Timbuktu, and in the airport, I ran into my college roommate.
Well, you know, that's fair. I remember that one time we were going to... I think we're going to Utah so I could run my half marathon years ago. Yeah. And we ran into Blaine. It's like we were in the same terminal. See, I mean, that's fair. You know, you're just shooting these holes down. Okay, fine. Another, it wasn't really a plot hole, but the ending was abrupt. And that for that was a big reason why it almost became a soda, because the ending just, I don't know, it just didn't make sense. I didn't feel like they wrapped it up in a neat way, and maybe that was intentional.
Yeah, for me, that did make the movie a soda movie.
Yeah.
Not slushy. Because when you're telling a story, there is a very definite outline to how the story should flow. And sometimes, rather than changing the story to make it special, people try to change the outline. Mm. And I feel like that's what they did with this movie. Because instead of going build up, conflict, climax, and then aftermath and the end, mm-hmm. they got to the climax and then the movie just ended.
Yeah.
And it felt very dissatisfying. I almost feel like the director was showing me this movie he's working on and he ended there and he's like, so what do you think? And I'm like, you know what? I think this could be a great movie. You should finish it.
It's like, but it is finished.
So, no, it's not.
So wait, he gets hit by a crowbar, and then they're crying in the hospital, making you think that he's dead, and then all of a sudden they're driving to Florida, and then he wakes up in the back car, and boom, ending. It's like, okay, but I don't understand what we're doing.
Yeah, like, let's let it wind down a little bit.
They could have given it another, if it had another 10 minutes to kind of go there, but maybe I don't know where you would have gone. How would you have ended this movie?
Any way you want. I can't write that for them.
Right. I don't know another ending for it. I almost kind of wondered if they should have just killed him. I mean, not to sound brutal or anything, but you got get whether it's a crowbar or a tire and iron. Either way, the dude got hit in the head by a with a fully grown man swinging that thing. I mean, I get that you could live through that, but I don't know. That could have been bad. And see, that was the other plot hole. It's like, how do those guys know that Tyler was there? You know? I mean, they all of a sudden just showed up at the wrestling match and were like, oh, Tyler's over here, and they run over and boom. It's like, how do you know that?
Yeah, they seemed really dedicated.
Yeah, it was just, so those kind of things were just so dumb. But I absolutely loved the relationship between Tyler and Zach. I thought it was good, and we're going to be talking about that here in a little bit. But before we get into that, please, like I say every episode, please rate the show 5 stars and share it with someone you know, because people need a good podcast to listen to. And what we love to try to do on this podcast is just talk about movies, talk about the goodness of God, and hope you learned something. And so let's get into our themes and scenes of the movie. And this is my first theme of the movie, because this is the second time through that I've watched this. And I finally picked up on one of the themes, and that is that experiences tie us together. Because you have Tyler, who is on the run because he burned a lot of crabbing pots down and stole a lot of crab and whatnot. And then he had Zach on the run from the nursing home. And so these two come together because Zach hid in Tyler's boat, and then Tyler outran the guy, and then they were along for the ride. And so their experience tied them together. And because Zach ran away, Eleanor, the caretaker, the nursing home lady, was trying to find him. And you can just see that all these characters from Eleanor, Zach, Tyler, and Saltwater Redneck, who, I mean, he wasn't a main character in the movie like the other three, but what all these characters have in common is so Eleanor, the nurse, is a widower. So she lost her husband somehow. We don't know how. The movie doesn't explain it, which I'm kind of glad, because I feel like other movies would have been like, oh, yeah, my husband was a wrestler, and, you know, he just broke his neck while wrestling. And Zach, I don't want you to be a wrestler because that's how my husband died. You know, other movies would have done that, right?
Right. And so what is she called since her husband died?
A widower?
No, that's if a man, if his wife dies.
Oh, she's a black widow?
No. That would mean that she killed her husband. She's just a widow. Widow.
Oh, a widow. Okay. Black widow. Hey, you never know. Maybe Eleanor is not as innocent as we think. She wasn't.
They were unclear.
She was in 50 Shades of Grey. Maybe not the character. Anyways, so all these characters, Zach, his parents didn't want him or they couldn't take care of him. So they gave him up for adoption, or I don't know how that worked. I don't know how he got into a nursing home. Did they say that?
The family put him in the nursing home. And that is something that people do. Nursing homes are not just for the elderly.
Oh.
People will also put like heavily disabled people in nursing homes. You know, anybody who needs round-the-clock care.
Yeah. I didn't know that. I thought it was just for old people.
No, you can be much younger and be in a nursing home because of your medical conditions.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. So you had Zach, didn't know about his parents. It feels like a lostness there. You had Tyler, who we're not exactly told how he killed his parents. He could have been inebriated. He could have been drunk under the wheel, or he could have just been tired. I don't think they specifically said that.
Tyler didn't kill his parents.
Sorry, not the parents. The brother. The brother. I've watched this movie, I swear.
What are we talking about?
So Tyler, he lost his brother, and it was partially his fault because he was behind the wheel. And then you had Saltwater Redneck. For whatever reason, he was a big deal in the wrestling community there, and then he wasn't a big deal. So all these characters, they had an experience of lostness, and their lostness in some way, shape, or form tied them together. So all these characters experience loss, but in different ways. And I think for Christians, you know, just to kind of, I don't know, put a Christian theme or a spin on this, and this is just for people too that aren't believers, but Christians, it kind of made me think of, there are Christians that experience doubt, but in different ways. Some could, you know, if you're like me, you could have experienced doubt through salvation, or questioning salvation, that is. Or others experience doubt whether God really cares about our problems, and so on and so forth. But all these questions, all these doubts could bring us together as a community to what? Am I not doing this right?
I just don't see how that relates to loss. Loss and doubt are very different. Right. Doubt can come out of loss.
Yeah. Well, I noticed the theme in this movie. I'll be honest, this wasn't full-fledged doubt. I noticed the theme in this movie, and so help me walk me through this theme, because their experience tie us together. So how can, like, what's the thought in that?
That doing life together makes you closer?
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, do you just want to move on since mine sucked?
Are you just going to trim that up a lot?
Well, yeah, I don't know. Should I even include that because it sucked so bad?
It wasn't that bad. Your wrap-up just didn't make sense.
Well, I don't know how
it didn't really relate.
Well, you know what? The movie didn't have a great wrap-up either. So guess what? There you go.
Ooh.
Ooh. It fits with the theme.
Okay. Let me share a scene. So at one part, Tyler is hitchhiking, and a guy in a truck picks him up, and he's got a dog with him. And Tyler says, "She a good dog?" And the guy says, "Good enough. She don't run away, so I guess she's mine." And I think that is actually kind of a reflection of all three main characters. So they don't have any blood connection to each other. They're not related. They don't have any true ties to one another. None of them have to be together. Mm-hmm. Even Eleanor, she doesn't have to be chasing Zach, even though it's kind of her job. She totally could have just skipped out. It's just a job. But each of these people chose to stick together. They chose not to run away from one another. So I guess they belong to each other by the dog reasoning. She don't run away, so I guess she's mine. Earlier in the movie, when Zach was trying to escape from the nursing home, he was being helped by another resident named Carl. And Carl said to Zach, "Friends are the family you choose." The three of them chose each other, and they chose to be a family. And that's kind of what the church is, if you think about it. We aren't blood relatives with anybody in our church. But we choose them, and that makes them our family.
I mean, truth be told, they're more, I mean, the church that we go to are more my family than most of my blood family.
Yeah, absolutely. We spend way more time with them.
Right.
They're our support. We're their support.
Yeah.
Paul talks in the New Testament about how we're all adopted children of God, and we adopt one another too as brothers and sisters. And some people want to make that all very complicated, but it isn't. You know, we choose each other, and that means that we don't run away.
I really like that because I think sometimes it's easy for us as Christians to keep moving from community to community because of stupid stuff. But at the end of the day, it's a choice. Are you going to stay with these people even though they have some areas in their lives that may need worked on? Because I think some Christians, and I've been one of those that have been wanting to find the perfect community. And again, at the end of the day, we all have our baggage that we come with. We see that with Tyler. We see that with Zach. We see that with Eleanor. We see that with Redneck, Saltwater Redneck. And are you going to love these people despite their flaws in their lives? Mm-hmm. And are you going to stick with them and be like God who... I mean, Jesus, he stuck with the disciples. I mean, one denied him, another doubted him. I mean, all of them doubted him, really. But, I mean, he stuck with them through thick and thin. It's just a good reminder to stick with people, even though they're not your blood. And so I like that point a lot. And see, you know, you did it again. I didn't pick up on that.
Oh, fun.
So another scene that I really loved, this was probably one of my favorite scenes in the movie, and this is where it really bumped up in the slushy area for me, but it's when Tyler was talking to Eleanor about Zach on the boat when they're drifting off into, is that an ocean or is that a river that they're, where are they on?
It's like a swamp thing.
I don't even know. But anyways, they were talking and Eleanor's like, "Hey, you know, you need to sit down. You know, have you, you know, taken your meds or whatever that she has said." And she, the whole time, is trying to baby Zach. And Tyler knows that Zach is more capable than everyone thinks. But I also love Tyler and how he was honest with Zach's limitations. He was like, "Hey, you know what? You're not going to be an Olympic swimmer. You're not going to be an NBA basketball star." And this when he is telling Zach this about these things, about his limitations, it was in a different scene than when he is talking to Eleanor. But he's saying, hey, you know, you're not going to be these things. You're not going to be a Michael Phelps, a big Olympic swimmer. You're not going to be Kobe Bryant, one of the best to play in the NBA. But because of his strength, he can surely become a wrestler because he's strong. And that's what I really loved about Tyler's character, is that he didn't baby Zach in any way. He's like, mm-hmm. This guy can do things. He can swim. He taught him to swim and all that. And so it made me think of, I think sometimes it's helpful to understand how your brain works. You know, some people would say, I have ADHD, or I have this, or I have that. And that can be good, but it can also limit you not to change who you are.
Right, not to challenge.
Not to challenge what you can do. It's like, well, I can't talk to strangers. I don't.
Right, I have social anxiety, so I can't talk to strangers.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, I have social anxiety, so I'm going to challenge myself to talk to strangers.
I mean, you have to think about any job that you do, whether you're in some ways gifted at it or not. I mean, you think of all the basketball players, the NBA rock stars, the Olympic swimmers. I could tell you from watching documentaries about them, like, I believe, was it Kobe Bryant that I just mentioned here? He wasn't really that great at basketball when he was first starting out, but he practiced and practiced and practiced, and he eventually became really good at it. And so what I'm saying is sometimes we put these limitations on us, and then we don't do things because we've already said, oh, I can't do that because I'm limited. And it makes me think of this guy called, his name is Nick. I don't even know how to say the last name. Nick
Vujicic?
Vujicic. Vujicic. This is why I don't pronounce things. So that guy. Mm-hmm. He was born without arms and legs. And seriously, that guy could have said, you know what? I'm pretty much just going to sit and lay in a bed and watch a bunch of Netflix all my life. But he didn't. He said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go skateboard. I'm going to go swim. I mean, the dude's probably way better at surfing and skateboarding than me. And I have arms and legs. So what am I complaining about? And he's also written books. He actually wrote one book called Life Without Limits.
I had kind of a different perspective on that, on that quote. So I'm going to go ahead and read the quote with some edits for language.
You don't want to say the S word?
Some stuff you ain't never going to do. That's all right. You can't be everything. You ain't going to be no professional basketball player. You ain't going to dunk no basketball or be an Olympic swimmer. You sink like a stone because you're all muscle. Muscle sinks. Today you pulled me up out of that water. You almost pulled my whole arm out of the socket. Most grown folk I know ain't got that kind of strength. You're strong, Zach. And so I thought this speech was inspiring because it could apply to anybody. Like you and I, we're not going to be professional basketball players.
You don't know that.
We're not going to be Olympic swimmers.
I was swimming today at the Whirlypool.
Yeah, you were at the Whirlypool. The pool in Whirly, we should say. And, you know, neither of us have any disorders that we know of, but we're also not going to reach those heights. There's actually more of a level playing field than I had thought between us and people with Down syndrome or other disorders. We're not going to be amazing at everything. We all have limitations, but we all also have gifts. And I think the trick is to recognize your gift and then use it for good.
Yeah. And Paul talks about that a lot. And I believe it's Corinthians. It's like, you know, you can't say to the hand, I don't need you, or the foot, I don't need you. I mean, we all have these different abilities that we can do within the church mm-hmm. to help each other out, to where we can't say this or that. like we all need. I mean, you know, I look at people who, I mean, I used to be like this where, oh, secular jobs, like, well, God can't really use that. It's a ministry. But then a lot of, you know, the books I've read or the podcasts I listened to or the YouTube videos I watched to help me learn and grow in my relationship with Christ and my knowledge of scripture and everything, well, someone had to make the machine that printed the books. Someone had to make the internet and all that stuff to work. So, and the phone for me to get the podcast on.
Right. I mean, what it makes me think of is when you first started podcasting, you were just doing it for fun, but you got good at it. And now people actually come to you for advice.
Like who? Oh, I would love Arena. To know. Oh, right. Well, I don't know why. I'm not the, like a great podcaster or anything. I just enjoy doing this. But yeah, I mean, yeah, there have been a few people that have come to me about the podcasting advice. But we all have our different gifts, and that is okay. It's know your limitations, but also don't just say because you can't do something that doesn't mean you
can't. Doesn't mean you're worthless.
Yeah, it doesn't mean you're worthless. Like if you can't do something, sure, maybe you can't. But also, maybe you can get better at something. Like that guy with no arms and no legs. Yeah, he's not going to be Tony Hawk or anything. He's not going to be Michael Phelps or that Soul Surfer gal. But he can still do those things.
Right.
And maybe better than the average person.
Probably.
But yeah, just when you look at your limitations, don't be like, oh, well, I can't do it. No, like think if you can improve. That's the thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Another thing I want to talk about is when Zach was asking Tyler if he is a good guy or a bad guy.
Are you a good guy or a bad guy? Are you a good witch or a bad witch?
That's funny. Yeah, we did just talk about that, didn't we? So Zach wants to be a villain when he becomes a wrestler.
That's my voice, scary.
Pretty scary. I'm scared.
Villains laugh like that, you know.
What?
I don't know. I'm trying to be funny, but it doesn't really work.
You're scaring me. Zach thinks he's a bad guy because his parents left him.
Mm-hmm.
And Tyler says, good guys get left too. And it's not about black capes and evil laughs. It's about what's in your heart.
Yeah.
And then Zach asks Tyler, are you a good guy or a bad guy? And Tyler has flashbacks of his brother, who was his best friend. So Tyler fell asleep at the wheel and crashed, and his brother died in the wreck. And I think that is what made him feel like he was a criminal already. So why not go ahead and do awful stuff?
I have not thought about that.
This was the thought that occurred to me in the shower. So Tyler's already done the worst thing he could imagine. So why not go ahead and steal crab pots and set stuff on fire?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, crab pots setting on fire is not near as bad as killing your brother.
Exactly. So he's like, well, if I'm going to be a bad guy, I might as well be the worst.
Reminds me of that One Wonder Years character, Kevin Arnold. And he said something along the lines was he was lying to his parents, or he's lying about something. And he's like, well, if you're going to break a commandment, might as well go all in for it. Like, if you're going to lie, lie.
Right. Yeah, there's something psychological in there. But Tyler had a good heart that he'd hidden away, and we can see that from the way he treated Zach. But he did some really bad things, and Zach's question is totally fair. Are you a good guy or a bad guy?
Though, let's be honest, though. If Eleanor would have had a reward for Zach in that little grocery store thing when she first met Tyler, I'm almost certain the dude would have took a reward.
Oh, 100%. But he didn't really know Zach at that point. Right, he had just true. Met him.
He definitely wouldn't have traded him for a reward after he really got to know him in a relationship. That's for sure. But
yeah, Zach brought out the good guy in him. But I could really relate to that question, like struggling with, are you the good guy or the bad guy? When my dad passed away in 2015, that was what got stuck in my head. Like, was my dad a good guy or a bad guy? He was the stable one in my family growing up, so I looked up to him. And I even maybe idolized him when I was a teenager. But then I started being able to see the yucky side. And after his funeral, I learned about some things he did that were illegal and immoral. And it was so confusing to try and put these two men together in my head. Like this dad who loved to learn and to teach. And he said I was cuter than a bug's ear.
In the crap does that mean? A cuter than a bug's ear? Bugs aren't cute.
Just
and that's
it.
That's a very low bar.
I'm cuter than a bug's ear, okay?
It's like, yeah, you're cuter than a turd. It's like, well, thanks. I guess that.
I thought it was a compliment.
I don't think that's. I mean, it is, but it's a really weird compliment.
Well, you're he said some weird stuff. He also used to say, like, if something weird happened, well, doesn't that make your heart beat purple peanut butter?
Boy, I wish I could have met your dad. He seemed like an interesting character.
He was an interesting character. But yeah, I was trying to put that guy together with this guy who abused people. He lied and he manipulated and tried to cheat the system. Like, was he a good guy? Was he a bad guy? Solzhenitsyn said, if only there were evil people somewhere insidiously committing evil deeds, and it were necessarily only to separate them from the rest of us and destroy them. But the line dividing good and evil cuts through the heart of every human being. And who is willing to destroy a piece of his own heart?
Who's Solzhenitsyn?
Solzhenitsyn.
Who's a theologian of the past or what?
He was a Russian guy who lived in the communist regime, and he spoke up against the regime.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, he wrote this book called The Gulag Archipelago about when he was imprisoned in a Russian prison for speaking out against them. So this is one of his thoughts, his prison thoughts, I think.
So let me just read this again. If only there were evil people somewhere insidiously committing evil deeds, and it were necessarily only to separate them from the rest of us and destroy them. But the line dividing good and evil cuts through the heart of every human being, and who is willing to destroy a piece of his own heart. So basically, there's not this black and white where, hey, we're the good guys, they're the bad guys, so let's separate them from us. He's almost kind of quoting Paul, where Paul says, you know, everyone has sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. But it makes me think of that question that people ask, like, well, why doesn't God get rid of all the evil people and bad people in the world? And Jesus, he leveled the playing field and he says, hey, if you've hated someone, you've committed murder in your heart. If you've lusted, you committed adultery. He's leveling the playing field for all of us. And so if you really want to get down to the question, why doesn't God just wipe out all the evil and bad people in the world? It's because, well, in one sense, we're all that. We're all sinners. And for him to do that, he would have to wipe everyone out. And so I kind of like what he says. It's like, and who's willing to destroy a piece of his own heart? Like, I mean,
none of us have anything to brag about. We all have good and evil in our heart, but we get to choose which part directs our actions. You know, we get to choose to let the good grow in our heart. You know, we can choose to redirect our thoughts to shrink the evil. It's that old saying about you have two wolves in you. And whichever you feed is the one that will grow. You know, we have to choose whom we will serve.
So another scene that I was thinking about was the Carl baptizing Zach. And I found it really interesting when, was his name Carl or was I?
No, Carl is the guy from the nursing home.
Yeah, so it wasn't Carl. Who was the guy baptizing? Crazy.
You later call him Jasper.
Ah, Jasper, that's right. Okay, I don't know why I have it in my notes, Carl. But anyways, Jasper was baptizing Zach, and then he turns to Tyler and says, you want to get baptized? And Tyler says that he's a baptism by fire type guy. And I looked it up because I was like, what does specifically does that mean? And Google AI, who we all love, Google AI, says a difficult first experience or a challenge that someone learns from the hard way. So basically, Tyler is saying, yeah, I don't really like, I want to learn my lessons the hard way. And I was kind of thinking maybe in some ways he knew that he did not deserve forgiveness from God. I mean, maybe I'm pulling out a little bit of a stretch at this moment, but I'm trying to think why he would want to be baptized by fire rather than just repent and believe and receive God's forgiveness and mercy. Now from the movie, we don't see Jasper sharing the gospel with these two guys. Not that I'm aware. Maybe there was some extra scene cut out because of time or whatever, but Jasper doesn't really give the gospel message of, hey, we're sinners, but Christ loved us. He came to die for us. It set us free from our sin to come follow him. And if you want to follow him, you can get baptized. And baptism is when you get dunked underwater, it's like you're dying to your old self. And then when you come up, you become the new self. So it's kind of...
it's symbolic.
Yeah.
It's a way of publicly declaring.
Declaring that you have a new life in Christ. But I don't think Jasper really gave any of that to Tyler or Zach.
Right.
And so maybe that's why he was like, this is just some religious thing. I don't want to be a part of it. I'd rather just baptism by fire.
It's interesting that you think maybe he needs to earn forgiveness for the things that he's done. Mm-hmm. He does seem that like that type of person who's like, no, I'm not going to accept a gift because I have to work for it.
Right.
Which that's not how forgiveness works ever.
Right. It says in the Bible that it's God's grace, and grace is unmerited favor. So you can't earn it. You can't work your way to it. It is God's grace, his love, that forgives you, not you working really hard to forgive your past sins.
Right, because there's no punishment that would make it equivalent, right? Like if those guys that were chasing after Tyler, they could have just forgiven him. That would have been unmerited favor.
It also would have been a suckier movie, but...
but at what point are they going to say, okay, we've punished Tyler enough? Like, what's the bar there? I don't think there is one. Even though they beat the crap out of him at the end of the movie and Tyler nearly died, I don't think that if Tyler had gone back to the crappers, he'd be like, hey, are we cool now?
Oh, I see what you're saying. They probably would have been like, you need to owe us money still, or if you don't, like, you're going to get the crap beaten out of you again or probably dead.
He's never going to earn it. They would have to, at some point, choose to forgive him because he's never going to be able to make it up to them to where they're like, okay, we're square now.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I thought that scene was very interesting. It's like, where are we at in our, you know, in our walk? Are we wanting to, I mean, no matter what we've done, you know, are we willing to say, you know what? God, I just want to receive your forgiveness and your grace and help me because of your forgiveness and grace to change the way I live my life. Or are we just going to be stubborn like Tyler and be like, nah, baptism by fire, I'll earn my forgiveness.
It sounds unpleasant. All right. So there was another point in the movie where Tyler and Zach are trying to cross the river and... there's a boat coming by and it almost kills Tyler.
But the boat came out of nowhere, didn't it? I mean, they were just walking and they get to the river and they're crossing and they're like, yeah, there's no boat over here. All right, let's swim. And then all of a sudden it's boom, right there.
I mean, I think it's a very wide river is how that could happen.
Right. And so maybe just by the time they got in the middle, they're like, oh, crap.
Yeah. And then, like, you know, they're not moving very quickly. So,
yeah.
Tyler came very, very close to getting zapped. And so what Tyler told Zach was, you know, the question is, are you going to have a good story to tell about when you're gone? And, you know, we certainly like to avoid pain and suffering and trouble. Nobody should ask for it. That would be bonkers. But good stories have those elements.
No pain, no gain.
That's right. No pain, no gain. G.K. Chesterton, who I admire so much. I love you, G.K.
I know you are a G.K. Chesterton fan. We all know this.
I can quote most of his books verbatim. I've read them so many times. And one of my favorites by him is An Adventure is an inconvenience rightly considered. I used to have that taped to the dashboard of my car because my car had so many problems. Mm-hmm. It was such an inconvenience.
That car sucked.
But if I thought about it, those inconveniences as an adventure, then it made everything feel better. You know, like you...
Dude, whatever you want to tell yourself. You know what? I had an adventure yesterday with the dumb van with the tire being flat.
It was an adventure.
It was a great adventure.
You made a new friend.
Yeah, I got to spend like 2-3 hours of my Friday morning on that. Woohoo! Yay! Adventure. Fun adventure. Woohoo!
It's true though. Like if you change your perspective, inconveniences can become adventures. Yeah. So we're not going to seek out pain and suffering and trouble for their own sakes, but we have to accept that those are going to be a part of anything that's worth doing. Mm-hmm. Anything that's worth doing is hard. And it doesn't matter what life path you pick, whether it's building a career or it's having kids, it's going to involve suffering at some point in some way. But if you choose instead to not choose and to lay on the couch and do nothing, yeah, that's not going to involve quite so much suffering.
Yeah.
Except for maybe bed sores.
Right. I think of kids. I mean, because we're in the middle of raising 4 kids and it's hard. I'm not going to sit here and be a parent and be like, oh yeah, it's, you know, sunshine and rainbows. Like it's hard. Like there are some days where I'm just like, I just want to clunk out and not be a parent. Mm-hmm. But I know going through this and trying to walk my kids and teach my kids how to become Christ followers and be good members of society and whatnot is going to pay off down the road. I'm not seeing that fruit today. I'm not going to see it tomorrow. I mean, we are seeing it a little bit in Carver now that he's 7 years old, almost going on 8. But I know down the line, it's going to be so rewarding.
Well, and I feel like they're rewarding now.
Yeah.
Like they're a joy now, but it's also difficult.
It's also really difficult versus if I would say, yeah, I'm not going to choose to have kids because, I mean, that's a lot of work. And then, I mean, what are you going to do? Get down to when you're 65 and have no grandkids, have no kids to talk to, no one to see you or say hi. You're just going to be alone. That sounds miserable to me.
Right.
I mean, I'd rather have blood, sweat, and tears and pour into something that's going to be worth down the road, despite the pain and the challenges that we go through.
Right. Jesus said we will have trouble in the world, but that in Jesus we have peace, and we can have that peace because he has overcome the world. Mm-hmm. Paul said that our troubles are temporary. Mm-hmm. And when it's all over and we're with Christ, we will feel like those troubles were nothing compared to the joy and treasure that we're going to have. So I think the question is, like, when you're with Christ, are you going to have a good story to tell? Or are you going to say, I didn't bother trying because it was too hard?
Yeah, I think there's a few parables about that with people. What was the one parable with the
money?
Yeah, the money where the master gave the tenants this money and mm-hmm. some of them went and invested in it and mesh like good. And the other one was like, I didn't do anything with that. And
he buried it.
He's like, you evil person. You didn't do anything with what I gave you.
Yeah. You didn't try anything. You could have tried. If you just actively choose something, that's a great thing. Try something hard and do a good job.
And like, was it Kobe Bryant that said this? Or was it Wayne Gretzky? I can't remember. It was one famous athlete that says, you miss 100% of the shots that you don't take.
Yeah.
That's a quote.
Deep.
That's a quote
that's
right there.
That's deep right there.
That's deep. Yeah.
Shoot for the stars. And if you don't make it, you'll...
Shoot.
Shoot for the moon.
No, shoot for the stars. And if you miss the stars, you'll hit the moon. I don't know what it was.
It's a terrible quote, whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, all in all, some really great themes, some really great scenes in this movie, but it did have a stupid ending that I would have liked to see Tyler really, I mean, obviously he wasn't transformed and he didn't have a godly heart change towards any of this. I mean, sure, he had a changed heart in the sense that he became a better person and helped someone out, but he didn't really, you know, not that we're aware of, didn't really get to know who God was. But again, we just don't know. Trying to think.
You're really stumbling.
Well, thank you for that. You're welcome. I love if you told me I was a great podcaster, and well, you just gave
I gave you too much confidence.
You gave me way too much confidence. So yeah, I don't know. I was trying to finish it off there, but I guess, you know, we'll just end this abruptly.
Oh, like that's the funny. Movie. That's funny. Yeah, you would have thought that at the end of the movie, we would have gone into that conflict about Zach and his family dropping him off at a retirement home, you know, and seeing a little bit of redemption from that. I think we get a little bit of it because Zach was abandoned by a family, but he's chosen by a new one.
Right.
You would think that they would dive a little bit deeper into Eleanor being a widow. Like, why is she a widow? How has that affected her life?
Yeah. I mean, but then again, it was in some cases kind of real because for the timeline that they gave, most people don't really get into the most intimate part of their lives within a short time span. So, you know what I'm saying? So maybe it would have happened if we've gotten more, you know, 5 years later or something like that.
Well, that would have been a fine way to end the movie, like cut to 5 years later.
5 years later, Tyler and Eleanor are married, have wonderful children, white house, pick a white fence, whatever, and Zach's their adopted son.
You know? I love it. That's a great ending.
I don't think that would have been a better ending, if I'm going to be honest with you.
Well, it needed something.
It needed something, but I don't know what they could have done to make it better. I really don't. I don't. But I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
It is just you.
Well, next week, we are going to do a movie recommended by my buddy Glenn, who is a part of my weekly Bible study, and he recommended to us There Will Be Blood, and we started watching it last night, and someone wanted to turn it off after 20 minutes because it was boring. It's one of those movies that is slow burning. It is one of those movies that is art. Okay?
You can't throw me under the bus like that.
Did I say a name? I didn't say a name. I don't think I said a name. I just said someone just wanted to turn off. It could have been.
I am so shocked at you right now. How dare you?
You're the one that wanted to end the movie within 20 minutes. You didn't even give it a shot.
I had a long day and it was just a lot of not anything.
Well,
I wasn't in the mood for art. I wanted entertainment.
Okay, well, we're going to have art tonight, and we got to...
Okay.
So next week, we're going to go and do There Will Be Blood, recommended by Glenn. And if any of you have movie recommendation, please feel free to email us at movieapologetics23@gmail.com, and we'll put it on the list and watch it and review it and give our thoughts about it from a Christian perspective and try to show the goodness of God in it. But thank you guys for listening so much. It's been a pleasure doing this week after week with you.
And like my buddy Mark Twain says, trust into providence to put the right words in my mouth when the time come. For I'd noticed that providence always did put the right words in my mouth if I left it alone.
And like my friend, buddy Blaine always says, after we get done with the movies, don't party too hard without me. What? Catch you guys later. Whether it's at home or at the movie theater, Movie Night Apologetics exists
to show you the goodness of God in movies we watch.
I'm movie apologist Clark.
And I'm Bethany.
And this is Movie Night Apologetics.